Hear my words and bear witness to my vow. Night gathers, and now my watch begins.
Beware, spoiler phobes. You have stumbled upon a storm of spoilers, a podcast about HBO's Game of Thrones series in conjunction with the Song of Ice and Fire books by George R.R. Martin. This discussion can expand to include any Game of Thrones relevant books, shows, internet extras, special features, teases, trailers, interviews, rumors, guesses, theories, and general crackpotitude. We're not ruining, we're enriching. After all, chaos isn't a pit, it's a ladder. You do not wish to be spoiled or are not caught up, please stop now.
The realm. Do you know what the realm is? It's the thousand blades of Aegon's enemies. A story we agree to tell each other over and over till we forget that it's a lie. But what do we have left once we abandon the lie?
Chaos. A gaping pit waiting to swallow us all.
Chaos isn't a pit. Chaos is a ladder.
Hello and welcome to A Storm of Spoilers. My name is Dave Gonzalez and I haven't read any of the books in George R.R. Martin's The Song of Ice and Fire, but I have read the King James version of the Bible all the way through once. That was interesting.
My name is Joanna Robinson. I've read every book in George R.R. Martin's The Song of Ice and Fire, and I've only read the red bits of the Bible, which I believe are the Jesus-y bits.
Yeah, it's just the quotes, yeah. I think. Good job. That's the important things.
And I'm Neil Miller, and I've read all the books in George R.R. Martin's A Song of Ice and Fire. And just last week, someone gave me biblical text, which apparently is the book that saves you from atheism. So,
Wow, yeah.
That worked out okay, I guess.
Well, you know, you're on your way, and literature is literature, and so I'm going to always be pro that. And if you're, you know, into characters you're supposed to like dying in horrible ways, the Old Testament is for you. You're listening to A Storm of Spoilers, which is not going to be talking about the Bible much longer this week, but we are going to talk about the Game of Thrones series as it relates to the Song of Ice and Fire series and all of its promotional material. I love the disclaimer you just heard. There's some confusion last week about our line between speculating and things we actually know. Although all of us do work on the internet and are internet professionals, we don't actually know things that are going to happen for the rest of the season, even when we think we do. We are just using our grand speculation powers. So the goal of this podcast is, if you are not spoiler averse, or you do a lot of wikiing, or you've read all the books, this is to recreate sort of the hanging out with friends atmosphere that we all miss in the normal culture, where you don't want to infringe on people with your wild speculation and spoilers. So that being said, not sure that Bronn died this week, obviously, so we do get things wrong, and knowing that going forward, let's just have some fun, not have not fun. Any more complaints, please let us know. We usually respond to them with varying degrees of length.
Well, can I just say specifically the controversy that kicked up last week was because I was so confident in my belief that Bronn was going to die in a future episode. I still believe that might be the case, but just, you know, I don't actually... No one has told me from HBO. I have not seen the actual footage. I'm just being confident in my assertions. And I'm sorry if that confused people listening and they thought I actually knew things. And I can see where they're coming from, but no, I don't know anything. So
yeah, I'm still sad, though.
Yeah, it was all worth it for that moment of hearing Neil just, like, lose all hope. We want to create more of those moments. And then every once in a while, we guess that everybody's going to be on a boat. So, you know, it goes both ways. That's why this podcast exists. And that's why we're going over the fourth episode of fifth episode. That is a typo in our notes. A fifth episode of season 5, Kill the Boy, where Bronn does not die. Instead, we get to spend a whole bunch of time dealing with Winterfell situations and sort of on the other side, Essos. I keep wanting to say Easteros, obviously, but that's holiday land of forgotten toys. This week we start off in Marine, picking up with our semi-cliffhanger, but only a cliffhanger if you're a book reader and think that Ser Barristan was going to somehow magically be alive. He is not, and we sort of sideways get to the Hisdar proposal through some dragons and Grey Worm Melisandre moments.
Melisandre almost... is my favorite thing that you've ever said.
Miss Sandy?
Yeah.
All right. Yeah.
Sandy Claus?
I was telling Neil beforehand that this was the first episode we watched live, non-screener, and so I was watching it. My girlfriend walked by during the scene, and she's like, "Oh, hey, a scene with just two black people." And I was like, "Ha ha ha! Oh, she's right. I'm glad she's not looking during the Ramsay and Miranda scene earlier or later." Anyway, over in Marine, from what I understand, this is basically all retconning, but in a good way from how it happened, went down in the books. Like, we end up in the same place, but maybe Danny comes off better. Someone want to step in and correct me if I'm wrong?
The Danny getting married thing, yes. We were so on the Grey Worm and Miss Sindy thing. I'm like, wait, that didn't happen in the books.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, so the Danny thing is an interesting change because it in the books it's really not her idea, mm-hmm, and in right. the show it is her idea. It's so much her idea that she had to get counsel from Masinde to tell her, "Hey, you know the answers. Doesn't matter what everybody else thinks." So what's this is what she comes up with.
What's the reason that it's done in the book? It's just to so she has some semblance of power, but she loses it because the family rises again. One of the important families of Marine?
No, I mean, it's ultimately the same reasons, because Marine is kind of falling apart, and she gets desperate. I can't remember who, Joanna probably knows, but I can't remember who suggests it in the book.
Well,
but it's
in the
for
books,
the similar reasons.
In the books, so the engagement is, he has to promise 90 days of peace. If he deliver 90 days of peace, she'll marry him.
Oh.
It's still not her idea, but there's this whole, like, I don't think they're really giving Hisdar in the show as much kind of influence as he has in the books. And so in the books, it's more like he has the power to broker the peace that she needs. And so that's why it makes a little bit more sense than this in the book. Because though we've seen him in a few episodes, I don't think it's really coming across that he's any more distinguished than the other leaders of the family that, you know, she brought down into the dragon den in the episode, you know?
But he's like the king ethnic leader of Marine's long line of families.
I mean, not quite, but just has more. It makes a little more sense to me than this does.
He's got some clout.
He's got some clout, some mad clout. And Dario hates him more. I wish we would see a little bit more of Dario hating him.
We've only gotten just a little bit of that.
Like, Dario, like, sasses him, but he doesn't, like, hate him. So, yeah. Anyway.
Yeah. He's going to be super pissed now.
Ooh, that's going to be fun to watch. I like super pissed Dario.
That could actually create an interesting dynamic because we've already had that little moment earlier in the season where he's like, you know, we should have killed. Hisdar's like, we should have murdered this guy, executed him in the pyramid, and Dario's like, yeah, I told her to do that to you a long time ago.
Right, but that like almost strikes me as like sassy banter, right? Like, oh, I want you dead, like that. But
I'm gonna kill you soon. It's gonna be great.
He's the guy that through his butt exposition was talking about how he was like built in the fighting pits and whatnot. That would make sense. Maybe so. Okay, basically what you're saying is they're not bros.
He just doesn't like one percenters. Yeah, that's where he's at.
I like that interpretation more than this sort of people with masks bad, people without masks redeemable thing that we're getting off on. But I understand if nobody wants to get involved in Marine politics, because I think like last season on this podcast I was saying I didn't want to get involved. So maybe I was wrong. Maybe I was wrong about the details of Marine. All right, Grey Worm, Masande, that's completely fictionalized, but it basically seems to be setting Grey Worm up for some sort of meaningful death. Now that, you know, you can't fall in love.
I have a question about this.
A lower class. Oh, yeah.
So did you guys watch this with other people? And, you know, this is the first episode we watched live. In my living room, when this scene was going on, several people kind of leaned over and were like, is she going to just lift up that sheet and check real quick? Or... Because I think that's the eternal question that the show has not yet answered, which is...
Right, the pillars and the stones, right?
Right. Like, Varys didn't want to say when Tyrion asked him. Missandei is clearly curious. So will we ever know? I guess is the big question.
Do we assume that if we ever see what actually happened to Reek, that will also answer our question?
No, that's a different process.
No. Yeah, we know that that's the whole package.
Yeah.
Doesn't she know? Because even if... So in that scene when they were naked in the river bathing, right? Like, he was submerged, but his fellow Unsullied were sort of... I mean, she must have seen then. She knows what... I think she must know what the Unsullied area looks like. Mm-hmm. What sort of Kendall situation is happening down there.
Whatever it is, love conquers that.
Love conquers all.
Love conquers castration.
Love conquers Kendalls, yeah.
And I mean, if you've been listening to other podcasts, Joanne and I do, just because you can't have kids doesn't mean you're a monster.
Age yeah, Ultron. I mean, I've always felt that way.
Yeah, well, apparently that's something we need to clarify going forward in our fiction. But, I mean, like, I don't like this scene because it seems so obviously setting these two up for a horrible end. I don't know. There was a lot about this episode.
We've become so skeptical about this show. Like, every time we see Shireen have a nice moment, it's like, oh, God.
Right.
And every time somebody just has a nice moment, we're just like, God, this is going to end so poorly.
And this is
Maybe it's turning the corner.
This is peak fear episode for me, at least thus far. I hope next week isn't that, like, also that. But, like, basically everything that happened in this episode, I'm like, and here comes something horrible. Here comes like a zombie dire wolf in the cages, and Ramsay's gonna make Reek give him a hand job or something. Like, everything I thought the worst possible thing, like the second it happened. I'm on high alert here, and this was just like a quiet moment where I'm like, they're only doing this so I feel something for these people I already felt something for. But other than that, I got to see a dragon rip a guy in part after he was lit on fire. So, you know, I guess I was distracted in the Marine storyline with some awesome dragonness.
I don't know.
No?
The Marine stuff is just, I don't know, still not great to me.
But not a big fan of the Mad Queen stuff, as I'm calling it.
I'm just waiting for Jorah and Tyrion to get there, basically. Like, I don't really care about any of the people around Dany. Dany herself, not tremendously interesting to me. Basically, ever since Jorah left the Marine has not been that interesting to me. And the dragons are cool, like visually cool, but... I don't know. That whole plot does not grab. Anyway, no.
I think both Jorah and Barristan, and then now eventually Tyrion, are just like people that know enough about history to know what they're doing. And I think it makes Dany's investigation, or at least acceptance or rejection of what has come before, a lot more thematically relevant than this floundering. Works dramatically when you don't have dragons lighting people on fire. But that's because I'm also a history buff of this world that I haven't read the books for, so maybe I'm just a weirdo. Anyway, I think that's all Marine. We got a lot of other things to deal with. We'll leave Valyria to the end and spend the rest of our time trying to figure out what's happening up in the north. All right, so... Maester Aemon was predicted last week might die this week. Was he dead at this point in the book? Is the kill the boy, let the man be born speech?
No.
No, it's just the last thing he says to Jon before he goes to Old Town with Sam, which I thought for sure they weren't going to do, but since they mentioned Old Town this episode, they might do it. Mm-hmm. But I thought, you know, so Sam and Gilly and Maester Aemon go to Old Town and on a boat. They get on a boat. And
God damn it. We just got everybody off boats.
And I thought for sure they weren't going to bother with that, and they may not still. This might just be like a nod to the book, you know, plot without actually doing it, and maybe Sam could just like learn what he needs to learn at the wall. It really, you know, and if they do send them on this journey, I think they're going to send them with some other characters to make it more interesting if they did end up doing that. But I think they might just still skip it entirely. But anyway, the last thing that Master Aemon says before he leaves to John is that kill the boy speech. So I think people, assuming that there was going to be no Old Town and assuming that the kill the boy speech would still be Master Aemon's last thing he says to John, Maester, I keep saying Master, God damn it, Maester Aemon, assumed that he was going to die in this episode, either by natural causes or burnt alive or something like that. Just, I think everyone assumed that this would be the last we saw of him.
Yeah, which I also assumed during the previously on when they revealed, reminded us he was a Targaryen. And I was like, oh, here it comes. He's going to have some awesome dying words. It's going to be great. And nope, it's just so he could get a letter from somebody about Daenerys. Do we know who he's getting a letter from?
Yeah, I don't actually. I was looking. I sort of there was a red squiggly mark at the end, and I'm not sure what it was standing for. But like, because you could see last week when Cersei was reading Littlefinger's thing that it had the little mockingbird sigil at the end. Mm-hmm. So I sort of looked closely at this to see if I could figure out what the little sigil was at the bottom, but I couldn't. But the best part of that whole Targaryen thing, as many people have pointed out, is that Sam and Maester Aemon are sitting there, and then Maester Aemon says something like, "It's, you know, it's hard to be a Targaryen alone in the world." And then Jon walks in, like walks into frame.
Oh, hey, Jon Snow.
Yeah.
Oh, hey, a secret Targaryen. You know, so whether or not that's the case, whether or not Jon's a Targaryen, that was a great moment. So,
or it is further trolling by the show,
right? Exactly.
Like, they could just be playing this hardcore long troll game, which could be fun, but also really cruel, even by their standards.
Yeah, but how else are you going to keep the tension balloon in the air if you're not going to engage in trolling? Like, just not reference it until, like, the end of the show? I like it. I'm pro showrunners acknowledging that there are people like us out there trying to do what we're doing. And if they could successfully trick us, all for it.
That must be so hard, though. Like, you're just trying to write a story that's interesting and compelling to people, but then you also have to, like, think about the book readers that you're trying to trip up. I mean, I know people do it. You know, like, Joss Whedon, I don't want to talk too much about Avengers Age of Ultron, because Dave and I talked about that a lot yesterday, but Joss Whedon was sort of, like, bragging about how he set Hawkeye up to be killed for the last minute, like, reversal. And I don't know, anyone who's seen a movie probably thought this is, they're laying Hawkeye dying on too thick, so it won't be Hawkeye, it'll be someone else. But sorry, spoilers for Avengers Age of Ultron. Anyway, but he was
going to be our controversial thing of the week. You guys spoiled Avengers Age of Ultron this week.
But, but he's talking, well, all I said is that Hawkeye does not die. I did not say he died in his place. But anyway, he's talking.
Someone dies in Avengers Age of Ultron?
As if, like, tricking the audience into thinking someone else is going to die so that they would be taken aback by the other person who died. You know, that's thinking by head of, right? You know, and so it must be exhausting is all I'm trying to say.
Oh, definitely. But, I mean, then you also have, like, the entire movie The Prestige, which is just playing with the audience from five different ways about what they think they know. So, I mean, it's definitely it's a whole genre of thing, and I really hope that nobody who's listening to this podcast actually works on Game of Thrones, because you shouldn't listen to us. But yeah, keep us in your head, definitely, as we going forward.
We appreciate the acknowledgement of our existence.
Yeah. Thank you so much for trying to fool us. We love it when you're done with this season. I'm glad you're catching up on podcasts. Yeah. Okay. So Aemon lives, and we get to hear about Old Town. And it seems like who are the other characters that you're alluding to that they would send along with them? Just somebody to make that purposeful outside of let's be safe in Old Town?
Well, we talked about this before Shireen and Sleece and Davos went off to battle with Stannis. And I don't know if they're ever coming back to the Wall or what. But we talked about how in the books, it's, you know, Mance Rayder's baby who's in danger of getting burned, and Gilly and Sam and Aemon are responsible for sort of smuggling the baby out. But in the TV show, we were thinking that maybe it would be Shireen instead, because that baby doesn't exist. And you know, so then it could be Shireen, then that would be better than Gilly and Sam and a baby and Maestri. I mean, it could be Davos, could be, I don't know, those are ideas. But now that they're off to battle, I don't know how that connection would happen anymore.
Do you think it's just the three of them realizing that the Watch is turned against Jon and busting off before that gets to be maybe mad at him?
No, but why would they leave him? If the Watch was going to turn on Jon, they would stay to protect him. They wouldn't leave.
I mean, if the Watch turned on Jon and then you just have, like, a fleeing moment. Like Sam's John, like oh,
Jon
shit,
dies,
this is,
and then they
this
go.
This is because he helped the Wildlings. Mm-hmm. They're coming after Gilly. They're coming after, you know, my adopted kid, child.
It could still happen. Like, we do still have a baby in the show. So what could happen is that when Jon leaves for Hardhome, which I guess he's doing, you know, he didn't do it by the end of the episode, so I guess he'll do it next episode, right? When he and Tormund and whoever he's taking leave, if Sam and Gilly aren't with them, which actually I think they are, this isn't a spoiler. This is based on like fuzzy concept art of Hardhome. I think Sam might be there. But so I don't know if maybe, you know, Gilly then is in danger, left alone, as Shireen was not allowed to be left alone with the rapists and the murderers who hate wildlings. You know, I don't know, but it's possible that just Gilly being a wildling and being there is enough peril for her to want to leave.
Right.
Without Jon's protection.
I mean, they could do that to, like, ramp up this sort of idea that the Night's Watch is completely turned on Jon by this point already, and kind of regardless of what happens at Hardhome. But I don't know if they want to tip their hand like that. I don't really know what's happening because I've been trying not to wiki, because surprise is sometimes fun. But we never know. Also, I just really wanted to not be Ollie. I don't know.
Oh, it's so Ollie.
It's so Ollie.
Definitely
though.
Ollie.
It's Ollie and probably in the more tragic sense, probably Ed.
Yeah.
After
the
this
Ed
week.
Part
after
is
this
worse.
Week, there's just so much foreshadowing in that scene where it's like, oh man, I can see Ed turning too. So that's gonna be super sad.
I'm hoping Ollie's the head fake, and I'll take Ed because he's been there long enough that feels earned.
Why don't you want it to be Ollie?
It's
that kid sucks. I want everyone in the audience to recognize he sucks, which they will recognize once he stabs Jon.
No, I mean,
yeah. Are you not on Team Murder Ollie now?
Yeah.
Hashtag
kill that boy.
Kill that boy.
I think that specific boy.
He served his ultimate thematic purpose of being like the guy who looks up to Jon that can't give up because of what was done to his family. I don't know. Just someone else do it. Don't give him a full arc. There's been so many people that we've just forgotten about. And Ollie's going to get a full arc? Where's Benjen Stark?
Well, I want to address something that we talked about on Cast of Kings this week, which is that Dave Hill, who wrote last week's episode, is the one who came up with the like brilliant idea to give Ollie the job of killing Ygritte and, you know, inflicted Ollie on us in the first place. And he was an assistant last year and is a writer this year. And this is not how television works, as Brian Cogman was like eager to point out on Twitter when people were trying to give him credit for this episode. Writer Brian Cogman was like, that's not really how TV works. Like, you can't give one writer credit for an episode. But someone did ask me if I thought Dave Hill being such a newbie writer was the reason why the Sand Snake scene fell flat last week. And I decided to choose to believe that, because it could mean that, you know, if that's the isolated problem, then, but I don't think it was just writing. I think it was a combination of things, but
yeah, I'm going to say that I really nailed it when I said we needed somebody else who was a stranger in that world to be our gateway.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Regardless of who was writing that. But yeah, it is sort of weird. I did listen to a Cast of Kings that far. It is sort of weird to have a writer's assistant step in with a whole character that's now going to be super important. But the process of abridging, I imagine, for them was very difficult last season. So any help with that, it's like a diamond in the rough. Ollie. He's the best archer in his village. That's what he'll say on his grave. Okay. Anything at the wall. Stannis is going to leave and takes everyone. Yes, Stannis is the best. totally knows that Sam is worthwhile and gives Sam's father's backstory, which I appreciated. I'm really enjoying all the pauses for history this season. It's making...
This has been a lot of them in this season.
I love it. Stannis, I mean, definitely going to die, right?
Stannis?
Given how nice they're being. I mean, given how they're building him up as a character, aren't they setting him up to die?
I mean, they're either building him up or they're building him up to us for us to expect mom to be okay with burning, and instead she's not okay with burning, and Stannis is like, whatever the Lord of Light requires. And then we're like, no, Stannis!
That was a really good Stannis impression.
I think that they are building Stannis up for some kind of break, which I think the Shireen, you know, if we're right about Shireen, then that could be, they're building him up to feel like he's winning so that they can tear him down again and that it will feel that. So, you know, I don't know necessarily if he's going to die, because that's one of the things I wrote in my notes was, you know, Ramsay Snow is, he's good with all the weird stuff, but we don't know if he's any good in battle. Like, we don't know anything about the Boltons in battle. They're, the only thing the Boltons have ever done successfully is turn on people, you know, and be sneaky. So I don't know if they're going to be able to fend off this massive army that's coming toward them. But I definitely think Stannis is headed for some bad moments.
Right. I mean, that conversation between Ramsay and Roos seems strangely confident, like, together with you, but it seems like it's also just a play to make Ramsay feel like needed. I can't imagine that there's going to be a Bolton Stannis open battle, right? Because weren't all the northern lands already supposed to send people to the wall? Because John was like,
so. Well, and on top of that, the North remembers, right. Which ironically was said by several people. By Ramsay as well. And I think that's the thing that ultimately could do the Boltons in, is because nobody likes them, you know?
Right.
Like, they may not love Stannis, but nobody, they definitely don't like the Boltons. So I don't think when you look at this potential battle, if it ever happens,
the way Shireen,
there's no way the Boltons win.
The way it was debated whether or not Shireen should be there makes me think that we're not going to get a battle, but somehow sideways get to a burning. Like, it's like, oh, we're going to take her with us because she's not safe here. And, you know, she'll be safe. You know, we'll make sure she stays away from the battle so she'll be safe. So, like, the ultimate irony is they go and everyone's safe except Shireen. Right?
Yeah. And I mean, I think what's possible there is that, you know, in the books, Stannis is doing well, and then he gets stalled out because of a snowstorm. Basically, like, the whole winter is coming thing, like, happens in earnest. And in the trailers, we saw Bran standing in the snow, you know, and so she's in and around Winterfell. So I think that's what we're going to see, right, is, like, the snowstorm comes and, like, screws Stannis's campaign up. And, you know, the shot in the trailer of Selyse is also in the snow. Selyse on the ground screaming about something. So, yeah, so Melisandre's like, you know what? We'll get rid of snow, fire. Let's burn your daughter.
Oh, and that's such a lame reason to get rid of snow, or to burn your daughter. It's a fine reason to get rid of snow.
And
you need good reasons to burn kids.
Yeah. I mean, if Stannis is okay with his daughter, I mean, you're right, Dave. Like, I will just be crushed forever. If Stannis is okay with her burning and Selyse and Davos are united in not being. But I don't know if the show's going to go there. We'll see. We'll see what happens.
Okay.
I mean, I think they're definitely going to try to burn her. I just don't know who is going to be behind that.
In that,
that girl's getting burned.
She's getting burnt. I hope she. Well, we'll be cool. Okay. Let me tie this back in. I mean, we're not to Jorah yet, but let's just talk about Grayscale.
Yeah.
And how the fact that, you know, even though they don't have the John Connington character, how the fact that someone has Grayscale is important.
Right.
There are some there are some marine-based theories about that, but, like, what if Grayscale actually, like, you try to burn Shireen and she can't burn because she has Grayscale and you're, like, immune from fire? I mean, I feel like they would have figured that out by now, but, like, maybe there's something to do with Grayscale that will be revealed by trying to burn Shireen. Because that's a theory of book readers, that Grayscale is going to have some sort of magical defensive properties against the White Walker somehow.
Right, but that would not be against the burning, right?
I know.
Aren't those opposite sides of...
They are. I mean, but that's the other thing is, like, people are, like, what if we have a parallel of, this is, like, you know, once again, listeners, just me guessing, which is, this is a storm of speculation.
Oh, I mean, we are on First Street in Crazy Town at this point, so...
Yeah, okay. So, what if Jorah ends up in the fighting pits when, you know, Drogon shows up and, like, Jorah gets blasted with dragon fire and he doesn't burn because he's got Grayscale and Shireen doesn't burn because she's got Grayscale? That's just a thought. Like you said, Crazy Town. So, I'm done talking about being a crazy...
If Dany doesn't love Jorah after he's also unburnable, then I just...
She never will.
I don't think friend zoning is a thing, but I will bring it back for that. Oh, man. Okay, so in this Blizzard scenario, you're saying that something horrible happens to Sansa, but both armies are already in the field, so it gives her a chance to put a lamp in the top of the tower and Brienne comes rushing in?
Maybe.
Or, sorry, I just took a U-turn back to Crazy Town. So the assumption is, right, because Brienne goes, hey, can you get a message to Lady Sansa? We don't see the guy say yes, but I think, right, he basically tacitly says yes.
Right.
And then
the guy who sort of looks like Jorah Mormont, come on, tell me that that's not weird. He kind of looks like Ian Glenn, like an old grizzled version of him.
With, like... way worse hair. Anyway,
obviously.
Actually, Ian Glenn doesn't have great hair, but he pulls it off. Anyway, and then we cut to that lady being like, Lady Sansa, you're not alone. Put a light in the tower. And so we're meant to think, I mean, this is like Cersei fake necklace in a box from Dorne level crazy. Like, what if she's not relaying a message from Brienne? What if this is a Ramsay mindfuck head fake? Right? Like, what if that lady is working for Ramsay? Because, like,
that does fit with Ramsay, though.
It does. Oh, like, with the whole Theon thing where he was like, where he helped Theon escape only to be like, haha, fuck you. I'm actually your captor. You know, like, that's how we met Ramsay.
I don't know if I could take another season where Ramsay gets to do whatever he wants and nothing bad happens to him.
I mean, Brienne's going to kill the shit out of him. Someone's going to kill the shit out of Ramsay. But, like, before we get there, maybe, you know, he messes with Sansa a little bit more.
You know what, though? Okay. I'm gonna get on the bus here in Crazy Town.
To Crazy Town?
All right. Bus to Crazy Town.
Because I think this is an interesting theory, and here's how it could work really well. If that is the case... and Reek witnesses it. And that is what essentially breaks him back. It breaks him in a way that he attacks Ramsay.
Oh, so...
I think that the great payoff to that storyline would be if Theon saves Sansa from Ramsay.
Which I believe he's going to do.
Right, which he does in the books. He saves Jaime. So...
But there's like a whole lot of like awful rape that happens before that we're hoping won't happen in the show.
Right. Which if there is, it's going to be next week. So, you know, gird your loins or whatever.
Gird your loins. Gird your loins for rape scenes. Great. Awesome.
Sweet.
No.
Well, because, you know, it's I feel like the wedding is next week and the wedding night is when it all goes down for Ramsay and his bride.
Well, so in the next time on, which I did watch this week, there's the whole like Sansa taking a bath in Winterfell stuff, which we saw on the trailer. I'm kind of hoping that wedding.
There's a shot of Reek like crying.
I'm hoping that the wedding doesn't happen until the end of the episode, so we don't get the wedding night until next week.
Okay.
Just to put that off a little bit more.
Yeah, just so that I don't have to deal with it next week.
It's the thing we don't want to talk about ever
so
any podcast.
The party that's missing here and the one that could eventually get us out from having to watch Ramsay do horrible things is Miranda, right?
Wild card.
She's the wild card.
She's like, she's an interesting player.
She thinks she has more power than she does, I think, unless she really is capable of playing Ramsay and this becomes like a secondary villain. If the turn that we see with Roose putting Ramsay back in his place is supposed to also be, you know, a softening of us constantly being on edge while Ramsay's around.
Another theory is that because Walda Frey announced her pregnancy, which threatens Ramsay's claim, that Sansa's going to manipulate Ramsay into killing her, or he decides to kill her. Like, let's say he kills Walda. I have bought a house in Crazy Town, so okay. I hope you enjoy it. Let's say he kills Walda and Roose finds out, and this causes like a schism in the family. I don't know. I feel like Ramsay's going to do some shit to Walda.
I definitely think that there's, just in the look that Sansa gives Ramsay as he's kind of being tormented by Roose, you can see her for the first time working it out like Littlefinger would.
Yeah.
And she kind of gives this almost smile. So we're going to have to build a structure on the Isle of Crazy here, but I'm with you.
Okay. Yeah, because I don't think it's just Sansa gloating in his pain. I think it's also like, aha, I have found a weakness, and let's think about how I can exploit this. And I think in the episode description, I think it's for next week that was released, it says something about Sansa trying to talk to Theon. And so, you know, maybe he's crying because she tries to like win him to her side, even though he killed her brothers. I don't know.
Or he admits that to her somehow.
That they're not dead.
I mean, yeah, that'd be interesting. He's got a lot to say.
You keep that in your pocket until things look really bad for Sansa, but you still can't save her if I was Reek. Like, you know, that's sort of like wedding night information. Just like,
save this for the wedding night.
Guess what?
Hey, your brothers are about to get real bad.
Things are about to be horrible in there, but just focus. So you got more brothers.
You have more brothers than you thought you did.
The little one and the crippled one are still alive.
Yeah, we assume Rickon's still alive.
Someone was pointed out, you know, because I think Sansa in the show says something like, I have no brothers or I have no family, or I forget what she says. You know, and some people are like, what about Jon Snow? But apparently in the books, Sansa's the only Stark child who refers to Jon as her half-brother. Like, she's the only one who's like snotty and shitty about him being a bastard.
Because she was really the closest one to their mom.
Yeah.
She didn't like that Jon Snow guy at all.
No, she did not. We should talk about the sort of Lady Stoneheart options for Sansa here.
Yeah, I do want to say first, though, that if my name's Walder and I name my daughter Walda, that's horrible. That's like Davina.
I think it just shows that how like unoriginal he is. Like, he has so many daughters and so many grandchildren that he just ran out.
Yeah. Be like, well, used all the women's names.
I've used all the good names that I can think of, so I'm just going to take my name and just change some of the letters.
Feminize it.
Walda.
Walda. Anyway.
Walda, isn't that, like, in the scene where he's introducing Robb Stark to his family, isn't one of them, like, Waldina or something like that? Like, they're all, like, a slight variation of Walder.
That makes me like him a little bit more. Just a little bit more.
Okay, so the episode, I'm reading the episode description of episode 5, and it says, Danny makes a difficult decision in Meereen, which I guess is proposing, right, to his Dar. Mm-hmm. John recruits the help of an unexpected ally, which is Tormund. Brienne searches for Sansa, not too hard. And Theon remains under Ramsay's control, which is true. But then, so the next week, it's Arya trains Jorah and Tyrion run into slavers. Tristan and Marcella make plans. Jaime and Bronn reach their destination. The Sand Snakes attack.
Tristan and Marcella make plans. Sounds like the boringest part of that episode. Who wants to watch
it? Although it is the most interesting diversion, potentially, because I don't think you know, in the books, it's not Tristan and Marcella who are making the plans. It's Arianne. So I think we're going to find out more of how right. they've changed the Dornish storyline next week, which I find interesting.
Ooh.
And then, like, but the Sansa stuff, I mean, this is what I'm talking about. The Sansa stuff is weird because for the episode 7 description, it's Sansa tries to talk to Theon, right? And then episode 8, Sansa confronts an old friend. But it's not Theon, so who is it, right? Unless it's Theon again.
She doesn't have any friends.
I know. I don't know what confronts an old friend means.
Who are Sansa's friends?
Well, she's met. Okay, she's been in King's Landing the whole time. So anyone that's been in King's Landing since she left Winterfell is a potential old friend,
like Brienne and Pod, I guess. But they're not friends. Like,
yeah,
I don't know.
She didn't quite warm to the whole.
Yeah,
I mean, it's Lady Stoneheart. I mean, come on, come on, guys.
By her old friend, they mean her mom. Okay.
Wait, who would it be in? Who's her friend? Are there any friends of hers that are in the band in the Brotherhood? She was never really into Gendry.
What about?
And he's not with the Brotherhood anymore either.
What about if? Girl,
yeah, he's on a rowboat.
Wildling with Rickon loops back.
Oh, Asha.
Osha.
Did she meet Sansa?
No, not.
Sansa?
I mean,
no. Sansa was gone.
They never had any significant time together.
Yeah.
I mean, every friend that Sansa Stark had is dead. Or a little bigger.
He's dead or a little bigger.
Like, I don't... Unless Robin Aaron shows up at the wedding, like, there's nothing.
Yeah.
She knows Varys.
Yeah, Varys, but he's way away.
He's way far away.
That's not even logistically...
It's
even,
the Hound!
Even by the show's
it's
weird.
The Hound. It's the Hound.
Oh, my God.
Oh, that'd be great.
I mean, there is.
I promise you'd never be raped.
No, book
just
readers
kicks in the door.
Book readers believe that the Hound is still alive. So
right, it's a monk.
Yeah. So you know,
book readers believe a lot of weird stuff.
Oh, you guys! I believe we have built a beautiful citadel on the Isle of Crazy. I hope it's the Hound.
We do. The Hound is showing up again.
Yeah.
In episode 8, get ready.
How it comes back before the mountain is thing.
Or maybe she's like buddies.
Produce.
Like maybe she's buddies with the Night's King and we just didn't know it. Like they have like a thing.
T.
And he shows up.
Okay.
Or it's her uncle.
Oh my God. Benjen Stark would be the best.
Hold hands.
He's
hand
back.
Shows up to save Sansa.
Yeah.
But she was never. See, that's the funny thing about that particular. And this is. We are so. Like we have built the kingdom of crazy.
Yeah.
Now. But, like, Theon's not even necessarily an old friend.
Right.
Theon's just somebody she knew. Like, they were never close.
Right.
So.
Tullys? What are the Tullys doing now? Are they around?
We've never seen her talk to a Tully. Oh. Like, I don't think it's Brendan or anything no, like that.
Well,
I mean,
the Blackfish is at the gates of the Boneyard. At the gates of the Boneyard is what we're calling characters that showed up and then don't matter now.
Yeah.
In the character's past doesn't mean in a past that we've seen on the show.
Yeah,
that's
maybe.
True.
Theoretically. Could,
I mean, it
could
it
just
could
bring
be,
back a handmaiden.
Yeah, I was thinking like someone she was doing needlepoint with in the first episode or whatever. Anyway. Okay. That's all I have
I
to say
I was there
about
when
that.
Your father was beheaded.
This is the fun part, though, of the Sansa stuff being so far off book that it's like...
I have no idea.
Well, I mean,
old
it could
friend.
Be, I mean,
yeah.
Hell, for all we know, it could be Lady Stoneheart. Like, we don't know.
Okay, I want listeners to write in and let us know if they think it's Cold Hands, the Hound, or Lady Stoneheart.
Who is Sansa's old friend? Also, real guesses will be appreciated. if we're misremembering something.
And my t-shirt campaign for this season is All My Friends Are Dead or Littlefinger.
All My Friends Are Dead or Littlefinger.
We'll put that up there with the Arya Murder Tour.
Arya Murder Tour shirt. All right.
Oh, all right. I feel
so that's
like,
Winterfell.
Yeah, I feel like we did a lot of Winterfell. Is there anything else we missed? A Cast of Kings has some excellent callback information about the tower and shots that are mirrored with Catelyn. You already know all that because you listened to that podcast. Let's talk about Valyria. where the our poster comes true, because dragons distract us from all the crazy stone men that are all around that I knew to look for because somebody tweeted at us to look for them. That was pretty sweet. How much of this does anybody know if the couple from the Doom of Valeria song is an important couple that I'm supposed to remember?
No, they're not.
It's just cool they never look back at the Doom.
Well, they either died.
Or it's a song about the original Targaryens.
It's not about the Targaryens who left to go to Dragonstone, because they left before the Doom of Valyria. Because they had like a daughter, a prophetic daughter, who was like, I see the Doom coming. And so this Targaryen's like, cool, we're going to fuck off to Dragonstone then. Yeah, it was a couple, and I think they died. They didn't escape. I think they die in the Doom of Valyria in that. But I mean, what's cool is that it's the words of that poem are not in the book that Weiss and Benioff wrote it, which is what Brian Cogman tweeted to me when I tried to give him credit for it. He's like, Dan and Dave wrote that. I was like, okay.
Yeah. Hey, Joanna, great work over at Vanity Fair,
someone else wrote that. No, but what he did tell me actually is that in his original version of that scene, he had Tyrion quoting from a history book that he had read. Like, so Tyrion would be talking about the Doom of Valyria, sort of quoting from a history tome, and then Jorah would like have read that book and know that Tyrion is quoting it and sort of call him out for it.
Oh, this is much better.
But you know, basically the point is he wanted to show that these men are like intellectual equals and like appreciative of history and have these things in common. So to have Tyrion start a poem and to have Jorah finish it accomplishes that, but more lyrically. So yeah,
and it shows it gives them both a sense of each other's value.
Yeah,
because I think they both up to this point are kind of looking at each other and be like, why does she need you when she's got me?
Well, so that's what Jorah has got to be thinking the whole time. Tyrion, I think he's the, you know, what the Mormont way. Like that sort of thing. I think he's with some sort of weird guy, like fall from grace gentleman. Like, I don't know if they've talked about the fact that Barristan was there, but in my mind, Tyrion thinks Jorah and Barristan are like on the exact same scale. Like left King's Landing, chasing a dream, maybe spies, until he sees the dragon and realizes that all the stuff Jorah's been saying is like real. Right? No?
Maybe.
I think that the whole point of the dragon is really just to drive them to survive what happens right after that. You know, it gives them both a good sense of purpose. Mm-hmm. You know, for Tyrion, it's the confirmation of all the things that he's ever wanted. You know, like he really could otherwise take it or leave it with life at this point after killing his father and leaving. And but this, you know, I think in the books they reinforce this a lot more about how scholarly Tyrion is and about how seeing a dragon really is kind of the pinnacle of what he thinks is awesome.
Yeah, I think they haven't done that since season one. Like, I feel like, right, you know, when he was on the road to the wall, he was reading and talking to Jon Snow about, you know, how important that is to him and the history and stuff like that. And I think they've abandoned that just for, like, a drunken wit, you know, and it's not quite what Tyrion is. And yeah, to see him, like, not only be in Valyria, so to feel, like, the really cool connection to that history, but then to see the history come, like, flying out of the mist, basically, you know.
Yeah, it's twice inspiring. If you count the stone men.
Well, the stone men are...
Everybody knows that they exist.
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
That shot... Okay, so it's not... I mean, the shot of the stone man, like, standing up, jumping down, that's all scary to me, but actually what scares me more is that wider shot
where you everywhere. See
all the stone men.
You see all the figures.
Oh, my God, it's so scary.
Every time I see it, and... I look and I'm like, well, some of those could be statues. And then the rest of my mind is like, oh, no. That's all just terrifying.
No.
Yeah, when they cut to black when he was dragged underwater, I checked my watch and I was like, no. Mm-hmm. No. No. But luckily they came back.
Well, that's maybe – I think we just found their line, like the line they won't cross maybe.
I was like pretending that's going to happen.
In that moment, I was like – oh man, this is next level for the show. To drag a character like one of the specials. You know, we talk about George's children, essentially.
Yeah.
Like to take that character and leave him hanging, like his fate hanging at the end of an episode, would just be just full on next level cruel for the show.
Right.
So I think that's maybe a line they won't cross.
Well, I mean, that's my argument that if Jon Snow dies this season, he gets resurrected this season because they're not going to hold that over to a break. It would have surprised me if they held just Tyrion underwater through a break. But as it is, we got a book substitution in for poor Jorah, who gets touched and gets grayscale, which is not him book-wise. Is this a Boneyard? This is a Boneyard character we get to add?
Yeah. So really quickly, first of all, I want to confess to something, which is that when this episode went up on HBO Go, like it went up like 2 minutes early. I was like refreshing the page for some reason, and it popped up.
For some reason. Had nothing to do with the fact this is the first one I couldn't watch on a disc.
Yeah, and I was like obsessively waiting. No, I refreshed the page and it showed up and I was like, oh damn, it's on. And I started it and I hopped to the end because you could do that on HBO Go, right? You can just hop to the end. And I hopped to the end to see if, like, I can't remember. It was something to do with grayscale. Oh, I think I wanted to. Anyway, point being, I hopped to the end to see how far they would go with the grayscale thing this episode. And, you know, all I saw was that, like, Tyrion and Jorah were damp on a beach. And I was like, oh, okay, that's where they went. And then I went back and started watching from the beginning. So it's like flipping to the end all to see who the murderer was.
Oh, they all did it. Let's begin the Orient Express. Oh, spoilers for the Orient Express.
Spoilers for the Orient Express. So I knew when they cut to black that that's not where they were going to end it. But, you know, as I pointed out on A Cast of Kings, that's what fucking happens in the book. George does it all the time.
That's right.
In the book, like, you know, Arya's blind, you know, Tyrion gets pulled down to like below the surface, you know, and then like you have to wait several chapters to find out that he gets rescued. So, you know, and then that's how Jon's chapter ends at the end of the fifth book is, you know, the knife went, you know, stabbing whatever. Like,
yeah, it's like he feels the knife go in, he starts to feel warm.
Yeah.
And then
that's what we know about Jon Snow being dead, right?
Right.
Right.
We don't even know if he's dead. I mean, he could still technically be alive.
Exactly.
We just know he passes out after getting stabbed.
It's kind of similar to, I mean, Catelyn's Red Wedding chapter is much more horrifying because she's like clawing at her own face and she thinks it's birds and stuff like that. But it, you know, we've seen this a couple times in the book of like a point of view character dying at the end of their own chapter. So like, you know, I think people are conditioned to think that, but I don't. Anyway, we're not going to talk about Jon and warging right now, but let's go back and talk about. Yes.
I think, okay.
Jorah.
Against warging, but for Jon coming back, because that's got to be the TV show spiking the football and being like, we're over the hump now, guys. On to next season.
Yeah, well, and they get to also spoil something, I guess, you know?
Yeah, and warging's such a hard thing for them to explain in the show. They've done so little of it.
And if Bran's in this season, there's no way they're going to have somebody else come in.
It's just, it'd be such a weird turn.
Here's what we know. If in the previously on for episode 10, we see Orel like warg into his
eagle, oh, yeah. Emma,
then we'll know.
I'm just going to turn it off.
I'm going to be at like a party with other people, and they're going to watch me storm out and be like, "What? What's wrong with Dave?"
No, fuck this show.
Oh, well, God damn it.
Previously on, you know, Gareth from The Office's eyeballs go white, and I'm like, fuck this joint, I'm out. Anyway, okay, so Jorah getting grayscale, like, further confirms for me that Aegon and John Connington, aka Griffin Young Griff, are never showing up in this.
Yeah, this Griff that got
John Connington who gets grayscale, yeah.
This episode, or this scene, essentially blows the Boneyard wide open in my mind. Because this is like, okay, Connington / Griff gone. Young Griff gone.
We have a list here that a lot of followers have contributed.
Thorough list.
I'm going to just start adding it to the post right?
And oh, okay. If Boneyard, people in the Boneyard?
Yeah, people in the Boneyard and at the Gates of the Boneyard, which is our temporary title for characters discarded by the show, even though they've been introduced, which means, like, we probably won't see Benjen Stark again, but we might. It's basically our truthers column. But yeah, mm-hmm. Definitely contribute there on our posts at fightinginthewarroom.com/gotspoilers. To both look and correct our Boneyard and at the Gates of the Boneyard. But Griffs are out, basically, it seems like.
I mean, they could still introduce them next season, and people are talking about how they could still introduce, like, the Greyjoy brothers next season, and they could, but I don't think so.
I think it's more likely that we get the Ironborn next season than ever seeing.
Yeah, there's still one lonely Kingsleech. Has not been.
I think if they matter at all, I think they're a season 6 storyline waiting to happen.
Yeah.
That's the only place for them.
I thought about you guys today because Marvel's Secret Wars number 2 came out, which is the first one that takes place in the new battle world. And it's essentially a Kingsmoot about who's going to like rule one of the battle world things. And I was like, "Oh, are they just gonna talk the whole? They're just gonna talk this whole issue about who's gonna rule this part of the? All right, now I know what a Kingsmoot's like.
It's like Kingsmoot, what?
Yep, Marvel's doing a Kingsmoot. Oh man, guys.
Dope.
All right, do we have anything that we left out from this expansive episode of Crazy Theories?
Well, yeah, yes.
Oh,
hold on one second.
Swing away.
Well, first of all, I do want to say that I read, I don't often go on like the Game of Thrones subreddits because it gets a little like, I don't know. I'm too old, I think, for subreddits sometimes. But
too old for subreddits.
That's a knock on me, not on Reddit. And I read this great thread on Jorah called Jorah the Explorer. Show only super super tinfoil, which is like their version of right crazy island. And this person just puts forth this theory about how Jorah could take the place of not only John Connington, but Barristan Selmy and Victarion and Quintin, like just all these characters that Jorah could take the place of, basically. So that was an interesting read to me.
So he gets out of the fighting pits, basically, is what you're saying, to become other characters we need?
Possibly, or he sacrifices himself because he knows he's going to die. I mean, he would sacrifice himself for Dany anyway, so, like, I don't think we need this, like, terminal, diagnosis on him in order to... Anyway, the other theory about Jorah having grayscale has to do with the Pale Mare or the Bloody Flux, which is basically dysentery that comes in the Slaver City in Astapor in Meereen, and it's just further problems in Dany's brain. So if Jorah comes and like starts spreading grayscale everywhere, which I don't think is going to happen because we've seen him like in footage fighting in the pits. So I don't think we're going to see Jorah like the Stone Man zombie this season at all. And I don't think we're going to see him touching people.
Because grayscale's really slow. Like, it's not a quick-acting disease.
Well, it can be slow or quick, I think, in the books. Oh. But I think in the context of the show, I don't think they're doing, like, the slow version and the quick version. I think they're just doing, the slow version. I'm hoping that, Dany does what Stannis did for Shireen for Jorah. And finds every maester in the realm to put mustards on him or whatever and stop it. But, we'll see. But anyway, that's a theory that, like, instead of the Bloody Flux, they're going to do grayscale. But I don't think they're going to – I think we already got the message that, like, Dany does not know how to control her city. And I don't think they're going to do, like, all the various elements that they did in the books to show that. I think they're trying to tighten the Meereen story rather than expand it. So
is there
I do have a question on this.
Uh-huh.
Do you think – so there is – at the end of the books, now that I've said this, I'm going to go down a path where I'm going to show that I don't remember. But the second son's turn on Dany because Dario's away, right?
Right.
Do you think it's possible that the Second Sons and slash Daario still turn on her?
Yeah, but what's weird is that in the show, like, we don't have a lot of sense of who the Second Sons are. Like, Daario right. mentioned them briefly in this season, but I feel like most show watchers just think of the Unsullied as Dany's force, you know, the Dothraki, you know, a lot of people, like, sort of sit up and look around and go, like, where did her whole Dothraki horde go? And yeah, so it could still happen. I think Daario could turn on her out of jealousy and mm-hmm.
for the Histar thing.
Yeah, somehow orchestrate something, but I don't know how much, you know, I guess since he's mentioned the Second Sons, we can see that he has some fighters behind him in turning on her, but I don't know, honestly. It's a good question. But yeah, they haven't done a really good, they haven't done a really good job distinguishing like the various sort of mercenary factions and
Varys mercenary faction?
No, damn. No Varys. Should we talk about those insane spoilers that are basically not true?
We could talk about the fact that we had access to what we thought was the rest of the season and for 3 days we're talking about like we kinda wish we didn't know. And then it turns
just,
out
it didn't line up. Lesson learned. Don't believe what you read on the internet.
Well, I think, you know, we did have like some this might not be true sort of mm-hmm. sense of it.
I didn't. I'm not. I know less than you guys. If you guys send me a link, it's like 5 exclamation points and the title is like rest of the episode descriptions. I'm like, well, these are my experts telling me to pay attention.
Well, here's what I'll say about those great, great spoilers. They were great because they were based on what he or she, whoever did it, blended book knowledge, and then like you know
character placement and
character pla- no and not just
first
character,
four but, episodes
like, first four episodes leaked stuff that we know you know like you know okay if you see Jorah in the fighting pit then I'm gonna mention that Jorah's in the fighting pit you know like this person hit all the right landmarks but it was disproven in this episode so that's great news it means we don't know what's gonna happen.
Yeah, we all felt last week that we spoiled too much, and then we all feel differently this week. It's great. Mm-hmm. So
it's part of the fun of it.
That is part of the fun of it. Now that you know we're all watching live on Sunday, where can people find your guys' instant reactions to Game of Thrones on the internet, since we're a little delayed?
Oh, I would recommend people follow the Storm of Spoilers Twitter account, because that's where Neil tweets, and it's really funny. I am not that funny in instant reactions, but you can find me at Joe Wrote This on Twitter, or you can read articles that I write about Grayscale or whatever on VanityFair.com.
Mr. Miller?
You can find, obviously, Storm of Spoilers on Twitter. That's where the magic happens. You can also catch my other thoughts at Rejects, and you can read several articles, I'm sure, about Game of Thrones and other things on filmschoolrejects.com.
I'm Dave Gonzalez on Twitter at DA70. I podcast on all the podcasts at fightinginthewarroom.com, which includes this one, The Thought Bubble, and a whole bunch of other shows about pop culture. And write at Forbes.com, Geek.com, Latino-Review.com. Not a lot of stuff about Game of Thrones, but I found a really cool, complete set of Kenner Star Wars action figures this week online. And totally go into a lot of detail about why it's so cool, including its lighting. So you might want to check that stuff out. But until then, we will see you next week on Storm of Spoilers.